Perhaps the most famous historically black college or university in America decides to disband its Department of Western Civilization and scatter its professors through other departments. The surprising thing about this story, because this has been happening at other universities as well, is who's upset about it. I'm Scott Ott with Stephen Green and Bill Whittle. And gentlemen, this episode of Right Angle, like all the others, is brought to you by the members at BillWhittle.com. This is a column in the Washington Post by Cornel West and Jeremy Tate. West is a professor of the practice of public philosophy at Harvard and a fairly well-known progressive activist scholar. And then Tate is the founder and chief executive officer of something called Classic Learning Test, of which Cornel West is a board member. What is surprising here is that Cornel West and Jeremy Tate write this column in opposition to Howard University's disbanding their Western Civilization department. Now, they are quick to note in the story that tenured faculty are going to be moved around to other departments, which of course means non-tenured faculty are gone. They don't say that. But anyway, and Western Civilization classes might still be taught, but Cornel West and his colleague here are saying that this is a devastating blow to the spirit of America. And they point out that Frederick Douglass, Booker T. Washington wrote Up from Slavery. Frederick Douglass, a famous advocate of slavery abolition, actually risked mockery, abuse, and beating even to death so he could study Socrates and Cicero and Cato. Martin Luther King was really lit up by these classics of literature, and he mentioned Socrates three times in his 1963 letter from a Birmingham jail. And so these kinds of classic works have been an inspiration to black activists, civil rights activists, for many, many years. And let me read this little paragraph from here. Bill Whittle, Cornel West and Jeremy Tate say, academia's continual campaign to disregard or neglect the classics is a sign of spiritual decay, moral decline, and a deep intellectual narrowness running amok in American culture. Those who commit this terrible act treat Western civilization as either irrelevant and not worthy of prioritization, or as harmful and worthy of only condemnation. Bill, not only was it surprising to me to hear somebody of Cornel West's stature on the left stand up and say this, but then I heard a panel discussion about it on MSNBC's Morning Joe, and every single person on the panel echoed what Cornel West was saying. What do you think is going on at least the academic left here when they are standing up to defend what has been decried in recent years as this hateful, racist, bigoted, European, white ideology that we call Western civilization?
I won't presume to speculate on their motives, but all I can tell you is it's just some of the best news I've heard in quite a long time. If there's anything more depressing than watching universities continue to close down the number of things you can learn while you attend a university, it's thinking about the people who fought so hard for education in the first place and their reaction to these kind of things. You mentioned Frederick Douglass, of course, and I've done a lot of referencing to Booker T. Washington, who I think is one of the great American heroes. And it's funny you mention that because opposing Booker T. Washington and his idea that everyone, that the black community should come into American society as equals with their own economy and so on, the person who was most opposed to that was a Harvard graduate, a first black man to graduate from Harvard named W.E.B. Du Bois. And I consider Du Bois to be an enemy, essentially, of the way that we should have handled this. But I go to all this to simply say this. I want to read you a quote from W.E.B. Du Bois because I think it is one of the most beautiful things I have ever heard. I wrapped up my episode on Booker T. Washington with this quote from his adversary, W.E.B. Du Bois, and I'm going to leave it to this man who really fought the battle rather than the people 100 years after him who are undoing all of his good works. Now, this is what W.E.B. Du Bois had to say. I sit with Shakespeare and he winces not. Across the color line, I move arm in arm with Balzac and Dumas, where smiling men and welcoming women glide in gilded halls. From out of the caves of evening that swing between the strong-limbed earth and the tracery of stars, I summon Aristotle and Aurelius and what soul I will, and they all come graciously with no concern nor condescension. So wed with the truth, I dwell above the veil. What do you say to that? You're dealing here with one of the founders of the entire liberation of Black people in America. Again, a person who I personally disagree with, but what do you say when a person like that can say, I sit with Shakespeare and he winces not? What is he trying to say when he says that? What is W.E.B. Du Bois trying to say when he says, I sit with Shakespeare and he winces not? He says, I can communicate with Shakespeare. I can talk with Shakespeare. I can read Shakespeare. I can have a spiritual connection to Shakespeare. And Shakespeare does not look down on me. He does not think of me as somebody incapable of understanding him. He is basically saying that as a person with a mind, he can connect to any of these great writers, Dumas and Aristotle. I can reach out and touch them and talk with them as if they were here. To deny this, to throw this under the wheels of this small-minded, petty hatefulness that's driven by neurotic group of small group of individuals who are determined to shut down knowledge is a travesty of the first order. It is a catastrophe. And Howard University ought to be ashamed of itself. And every single person that graduated from Howard University ought to be ashamed of their school. And they ought to do everything in their power to defund that university until they decide to start understanding what education really is.
Stephen Green, this is another passage from this column by Cornel West and Jeremy Tate. They say, to end this spiritual catastrophe, meaning the fact that universities across the country are disbanding their Western classics departments, to end this spiritual catastrophe, we must restore true education, mobilizing all of the intellectual and moral resources we can to create human beings of courage, vision, and civic virtue. Students must be challenged. Can they face texts from the greatest thinkers that force them to radically call into question their presuppositions? Steve Green, that sounds to me like something that was written by some staunch conservative advocate of traditional, the traditional Western canon and method of education. What do you think is happening now? Is the left finally beginning to realize that the danger of some of its advocates who have gone too far and essentially are engaged in book burning?
Thank God. Really, this is wonderful. Thank God that these people were steeped in the Western canon, because everybody is a conservative about what they know best. And we might disagree politically with Cornel West, but he is steeped in the Western canon. It is in the fiber of his being. So he has risen to defend it, and God bless him for that. Pardon the noise. We're having some demo work done in our kitchen right now. And of course, they just got started as soon as I started speaking. That aside, it's interesting that Martin Luther King Jr. was quoting Socrates from his prison cell, because both men were great moral philosophers who were persecuted for pursuing justice in their own lands, and both accomplished great things. There's a reason every culture that lasts has a canon, because the canon are those things about your culture that withstand the test of time, because they are worthy of withstanding the test of time. The popular culture comes and goes. It'll mostly be gone in 100 years and replaced with something entirely new even before then. But the canon, those things that are worthy of lasting, can and do last, and it is the academia's job to protect those things. I'm not familiar with China's cultural canon or Japan's cultural canon the way I am with America's, but I certainly wouldn't expect the people or the governments or the schools of China or Japan or any other country to simply throw out their canon, because that is to throw out your culture. This is a cultural thing, not a color thing. One of the greatest versions of Shakespeare's Scottish play is Kurosawa's Throne of Blood. Throne of Blood. It's a Japanese film from 1957, and it's one of the great retellings of Macbeth. Star Wars is a retelling of Kurosawa's Fortress. I just
Hidden
forgot.
Fortress.
Hidden Fortress. Thank you. This is cultural cross-pollination, and it's how you add to your culture. But before you can add to it, you've got to have the foundations. Those foundations are the canon. They're the things that last, whether it's Socrates from 3,000 years ago, Shakespeare from 400 years ago, or Duke Ellington from the 1930s and 40s. These are the things that are worthwhile. These are the things that last. And it's not about color. It's about culture. And when academia tries to throw out the canon, what they're trying to do is to destroy the very thing that they were assigned to protect.
West and Tate in this column go on to say that the classical canon is actually a foundation for the Black experience, and the aim of education really should be for Black people and everybody else is to help to lift every voice. And they say you can't find your voice without being grounded in tradition, grounded in legacies, grounded in heritages. And it occurred to me when I was reading this that it's not only that. It's not only that this provides a foundation and essentially gives you a head start in life because you don't have to reinvent the entire idea of human existence and happiness, your own self, but you can drop your bucket into the well of wisdom that has endured for countless generations and be able to enjoy the benefit of other people's mistakes, the benefit of other people's countless hours of pondering and debate and questioning. All of that lays before you like acres of diamonds from which you can pick up various stones and keep them as your own. And I think one of the most empowering things about this, especially if you're coming at it as an African-American student, is to be able to choose that which you wish to adopt and that which you wish to discard. And you can read any of these classics and say, that idea, that resonates, that's true, that is good, that is mine. But you can also look at some of the stuff, because West and others have pointed out in this article, it's humanities classical yes. literature. It's not dropped yes. down from the gods. It is written by fallible men. And the whole idea of dealing with a world full of fallible men is, as my old pastor used to say, you got to be able to eat the meat and throw away the bones. And if you focus on nothing but the bones, you're going to find one wedged sideways in your throat and you're going to be uncomfortable. So being able to put a Howard University student in charge of being able to scrutinize Shakespeare or Cato or Cicero or Homer and say, yes, this makes sense, this resonates, I evaluate this as true in the context of my experience, or no, this guy was wrong at his time, he's wrong now. That is power. That is power that you get. You get to decide which elements of other people's thoughts you're going to adopt as your own. And I may disagree with which ones you discard and which ones you keep, but you have the authority. And I don't think Howard University is going to stop teaching those classics, but by eliminating that department, as so many universities have done, they are basically making a virtue signaling move that's not a slap in the face to white Western Europeans. It's a slap in the face and an infantilization of their very students, those who deserve the opportunity to choose for themselves. For Bill Whittle and Stephen Green, I'm Scott Ott. Thanks to the members at BillWhittle.com for making Right Angle possible.